The Baker Street Babes would like to thank their sponsor, the Baker Street Journal, the publication of the Baker Street Irregulars. It's been around since 1946, so it's almost as time-honored as Holmes and Watson themselves. It publishes 4 issues a year, spring, summer, autumn, winter, and a Christmas annual. Each issue is full of Sherlockian news, reviews of various publications, and articles that play the game. That means they're written from the perspective that Holmes and Watson were real people. I think we can all agree that Sherlock Holmes was real, can't we? Most importantly, you don't have to be a member of the BSI to subscribe to the journal or even to publish in it. So go check it out at www.bakerstreetjournal.com or follow the editor Steve Rothman on Twitter at BakerSTJournal. Thank you very much.
The Sherlock Fitness Challenge is a group of fitness-minded Sherlock fans banding together for mutual support and friendly competition. We use a site called Fitocracy that gives you points for everything from taking the stairs to running a marathon. July's challenge is the Great Sherlock Cab Chase, where we compete to see who can walk, run, or hike the most miles in the month of July. In the spirit of that challenge, why not organize a cab chase meetup in your city? Get together with your local Sherlockian friends at a park or track and go for a group run. It's amazing how much harder it is to give up when you've got friends around you cheering you on. To join a fun and supportive community, and occasionally win cool prizes, join the Sherlock Fitness Challenge at fitocracy.com/group/9485. Hope to see you there!
Gassadine Books, an imprint of Wessex Press, is the premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. They've assembled a broad array of titles that are sure to appeal to the discriminating reader. Whether you've just discovered The Great Detective or you're a seasoned Sherlockian, Gassadine Books is sure you'll find many unique volumes to pique your interest, and the Baker Street Babes are delighted to call them sponsors.
They call us the Irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1 be mine?
Welcome to the Baker Street Babes podcast.
Woo!
Yay!
Yay!
Today, I'm here with Lindsay, fellow babe.
Hey, how's it going?
And today we're joined by two members of the Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes, Susan Rice and Mickey Fromkin.
Hello, Podland.
Hello, Pod people.
Pod people.
Pod, yes. People. Pod people. I do like that.
Oh, they like it.
Yeah.
They like
that's
to call
great.
Themselves that.
Yeah. All right. As we start every podcast, we're going to ask you the babe questions to make you honorary babes.
Yeah. Ooh.
Here it comes.
It's brace yourselves.
Uh-huh.
So first question first. How did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
You start. You were a sinner.
I got the volume as a child of 11 under the Christmas tree.
The Double Day.
The Double Day. Mm-hmm. Edition with In Memoriam. And we were always very polite to our Christmas presents. We were not the sorts of children who ripped things off and said, oh, there, and threw it by one of them. We always tried to give some attention to them. So I opened the book and began reading. Well, I thought I was giving it polite attention. But some 10 minutes later, my mother said, perhaps you'd like to open some of your other gifts.
Christmas morning. 2 hours later.
And as soon as we'd done that in breakfast, I took the volume and went up to my bedroom and went back into it.
Oh, I love it.
So yes, I was immediately a Sherlockian. But I didn't know any for a long time. I was the only Sherlockian.
Which story did you start with when you opened the Double Day?
I first started with In Memoriam, and then I did Study in Scarlet.
And then Study in Scarlet.
Yeah. Yeah. So for some years, I existed as the only Sherlockian I knew. And then with a college friend who had a car and so was going to drive us down to college, so I'm 19 or 20 here. My folks take me over to their house. She's not ready, so we sit down with her folks to have drinks, probably soda for me, and I look down and I see a Baker Street Journal. It was like little angels singing.
Trumpets and cherubs.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
yes.
Unicorns.
Prats in the background.
So I took it over and I asked her father, are you a Baker Street Irregular? He said, do you know what they are? Yes! So he was then my guide into the circle. And at that time, the Detroit Science Society, where I grew up, was inactive. But he would make meetings for me. He would have 4 or 5 of the people he knew over. And he always served scrambled eggs and curried chicken, and have a third cover with a pale blue document under it. It was every dinner was that. And then I started teaching, finished college, grad school, started teaching. And for some reason, a number of my kids became Sherlockians. I have no idea why they picked that up. So we formed a scion by the time they were out of my school, when they were 12, 13, 14, and called ourselves the Trifling Monographs. Each one of us took the name of one of the monographs and responded only to that name in meetings. And every now and again, the same wonderful Sherlockian, his name is Robert G. Harris, now left the Strand, would have us over for a meeting at his house, kind of to show us how it was done. And he would always have a devilish quiz that we would all work very hard on, but we were very new Sherlockians at this point. So there was a lot of guesswork involved, but it was a wonderful time. That scion lived for a couple years after I moved to Greece, but then eventually died out when they all went to separate colleges, though we're still in contact with some of them. And Lucy Chase, who was at my wedding, was my lieutenant.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
We date from those days. So that was my introduction both into Holmes and then into the greater Sherlockian world.
Word. Nice.
I was a late bloomer. I suppose I might have read some Sherlock Holmes in school because they generally assign something, but it never took. And then when I was in Europe, after I graduated college, I was in Europe for 3 months and found I had trouble finding books in English. And I was desperate. But the one thing I could find was Agatha Christie. Everywhere you could find Agatha Christie in English. So I started reading mysteries. I got kind of hooked. But I still wasn't particularly Sherlockian. I did get, as a book club offer, The Annotated. And I started reading the canon then.
This is the Baron Gould Annotated.
The Baron Gould Annotated. It's a big two-volume one.
Published in, I think, 68.
Something. Must have been.
The one I got at Costco.
Yeah. And I still didn't get involved in Sherlockian things until I met Susan, who dragged me over to Evie once at the cocktail party and said, "Put her on the mailing list!" And I started going to Ash functions, and Susan said, "You got to be an Ash." She wasn't one yet either, so we both became Ash together on the same day.
Aww.
And the rest is history. You know, just get involved and start going to all the signs and the traveling distance. And
yeah, you guys go to very
almost. We get around. We get around. We have too many initials after our names to count.
Have the alphabet, yeah.
Which is always good. All right, second question. Your favorite Sherlock Holmes story?
Gotta say Hound.
I'm the same way.
All right.
Yeah, Hound.
Hound's got everything.
Hound's got a lot going for it.
Yeah.
Including home cooking in a cave.
There you go. Yeah. Found some tin peaches myself.
Yep.
I'll take the easy way and go Hound. I've had a different answer for this question that many times during my life, for one reason or another.
What was your present one, then, if you don't have a definitive one?
I don't have a definitive one.
They're all so good. It's like picking a favorite child.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
Yeah, I suppose. I
can tell you my least favorite.
Which go for
favorite? Case of Identity.
Oh,
really?
Here she
I am
goes.
Infuriated at that case.
Really? That's interesting.
It is when I believe Holmes was at his lowest.
Yeah, he's not so hot in that, but it's not nearly so much to me as, like, the Mazarin Stone.
Oh, I have a fondness for Mazarin Stone. The first quiz I ever won was on Mazarin Stone, so, you know, I still remember things from it that no human being should remember. Right. But Susan has been known to froth at the mouth over lots of...
Here's my problem with it.
What pisses you off about it? Yeah.
She was his client, and he never told her the truth.
Yeah! What is that about?
It just makes me so
mad. That is bull pucky. No, nothing about that is okay. Yeah, Mary Sutherland.
Yeah.
She should have been done right by.
And yet I wrote a song about it. So
yes, she
there
did.
You
go. Yeah.
Good came out of evil, then.
Has anybody seen My Angel? It's quite a wonderful musical song.
Angel pun. They're delicious.
Yes. All right, we're going to step away from the case of identity.
Step quietly and calmly away from case
step
of identity.
Step away from
the right.
What is your favorite adaptation of Sherlock Holmes?
Ooh.
I guess the Jeremy Brett. Although, of course,
which
I have a deep love for the Christopher Plummer movies, both of them.
Yeah, fun.
But yeah, I think I'd go with the Jeremy Brett at this stage.
Oh, yeah. To me, he's still the definitive Holmes.
Hardwick or Burke?
Burke.
I love Burke.
Oh, yeah, Burke's my favorite, too. I have a soft spot for Ed Hardwick, but yeah. David Burke, I think.
Ed Hardwick showed the wonderful sentimental part.
Mm. Yeah.
But he didn't have David's twinkle. There was always
something. Or the incisive intelligence.
Mm.
I liked that. It was such a revelation to see that kind of a blazingly intelligent Watson to stand up to Holmes. Yeah. You know, we were all raised on the Nigel Bruce Holmes, Watson. Mm.
Watson.
And, so embarrassing.
Really. It's like seeing your uncle at a wedding really, really messes.
He would be a favorite uncle of mine, but
right.
I don't want him as
right.
Watson.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Okay, and the final question, if you could have tea with any characters from the books, canon, the whole nine yards, who would it be?
Ooh, that's a poser.
No, I don't know. I don't think I could do better than Holmes and Watson.
Mrs. Watson, she'd give you a really nice tea.
Although, which one?
Which one, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say Mrs. Watson? I meant Mrs. Hudson.
Oh,
no, you're good.
I'm actually the same way. I would love to have tea with Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, Jen's 100%
Mrs. Hudson. She would give a nice spread.
It'd
be a good cake, some sandwiches, a really well-brewed pot of tea.
As good an idea.
She would have all the gossip, too.
Yes,
she would know everything.
She would know the underneath stuff.
See, that's the thing. Mrs. Hudson, smarter than you think she is.
Oh, yeah. She's got their number.
And reverting to the which Mrs. Watson? Only one.
Yeah, I'm on that page myself.
Someday, I will write my definitive treatise.
Ah, on a subject.
Yes.
Which is a really great theory.
I have a really great theory. I'm too lazy to really work on it. But someday.
We're going to get you.
This was going to be retirement
some
project.
Some kind of dictaphone technology.
Going on 10 years, and I still haven't gotten around to it.
Work up your steam and just...
I know, it's easy for you to say, writer of books.
No. When you find you have time between gourmet exploits.
Mm. Oh, yeah. All right, so let's start from the beginning. Both of you are members of The Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes, or Ash.
Yes. And BSI.
And BSI. We're here to talk about The Adventuresses, though.
Like,
so,
first in our hearts.
Here, for our listeners who are unaware, explain who The Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes are and how you got started.
As it happens, I wrote their history a few years ago, so I do have all the facts at my fingertips.
I knew we were talking to the right folks.
The Adventuresses started in 1967 at a small Catholic university in...
It wasn't even a university.
No, it was a college then.
Mm.
In Connecticut, called Albertus Magnus. And it was caused by Evelyn Herzog, who came to college with a canon, a copy of the Baring Gould biography, and a subscription to Baker Street Journal. So she was the prime mover. And she gathered around her, because she has a gift of friendship and a great kindness, a group of women who also became intrigued by Sherlock Holmes. And so they began epistolatory relationships with John Shaw, William S. Baring Gould, and Peter Blough.
Hmm.
They figured out in context that they weren't going to be welcomed by the Baker Street Irregulars because of that Y chromosome that just made them impossible. And so this was 1967. They made plans to picket. It was the natural thing in the 60s.
Right.
Yeah.
Those of us who lived through it, this is what you thought. That's unfair. And surely if we point out that it's unfair, everything will be fine.
While walking up and down, chanting slogans.
Yeah. See, the minute you tell somebody that it's off, they're going to fix it. They're going to take
the thinking of the time.
That's how it works. Yeah. And just for context, just for a touch of context, the Baker Street Irregulars, on the other hand, are the longstanding 1934 founded group of all-male Sherlockians who, at the time, fancied themselves the Sherlockian club that would not benefit by the inclusion of the fair sex.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, back to 19.
When pushed, their only answer was, it's tradition, which has always struck me as rather weak.
Which is still used by the all-male science.
Yes. How many
there are
there
a few
there
still?
Five or six? Yeah. Yes, tradition. Or they say, we tell dirty jokes, and we would say, so do we.
They're just afraid ours are better than theirs.
And they were, I'm sure.
Right, they are.
They probably are, yeah.
It's traditional, like spinning your own flax.
And what is your name, anyway?
Keep that up.
So they did. They picketed it in 1968 in January. Six of them went down.
You should set the stage a little for that, though, because it was snowy and crazy.
It was horrible, blustery, dreadful weather.
It was
not
a fit night out for man nor beast.
Right?
Yeah. Or
exactly.
College co-ed with
the
mini skirts and the fishnet stockings.
Wind howling like a child in the chimney, and then what was the costume again, you just said?
They wore mini skirts and fake fur coats.
Yes.
This was in the 60s.
It was the 60s.
No, I just think that's wonderful. It's such a beautiful
And they
image.
Marched up and down.
They had the picket signs.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat was on crutches, and so she was marching on crutches.
She'd broken her foot or something.
And as Evie says, we all ended up limping in her rhythm. So they were bearded by a policeman, and everyone else knew what to do. They thrust Evie forward.
Talk to the popo!
So as Evie said, she looked him straight in the lapel and said,
If you want us to leave, we'll leave.
And he said, are you not allowing anybody to enter the restaurant? And they said, oh, no. And he said, then you can stay.
They had actually applied for a protest permit, but it hadn't arrived.
I see. Gotcha.
Bureaucracy being what it is.
So
they marched up and down, and some of the men in the upper room of the restaurant were amused, but more of them were disgusted and horrified.
Shocked!
Yes.
Shocked,
especially Julian Wolfe.
Oh, my stars and garlic.
And Julian Wolfe was the commissioner then, and he found this absolutely horrible. So after the meeting kept, people would keep going over to the windows, looking down and seeing if they were still there. And after this went on for a while, he said to John Shaw and Peter Blau, who he knew had been communicating with them, do something about your damned girls. So John and Peter came down, and they said they could stop now. They'd made their point. Oh, no, they all said, still marching. And John and Peter upped the ante and said, we'll buy you drinks in the bar.
Which
this sounded pretty good.
Yeah, it did.
And then they still were uncertain. And then they said, and we will carry your message upstairs.
Okay.
So they took the six young women into the bar and bought them all drinks. And they wrote what has since been known as the Cocktail Napkin Manifesto.
I love that.
Alternatively known as the Paper Bag Manifesto.
No, but we already figured
but
that
it
one
really
out.
Was a cocktail.
Right.
Cocktail
that was written out later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they carried him up.
It is not for ourselves, we ask. Oh, no.
They carried it up and they read it to the group and then they balled it up and threw it in a corner and went on with their meeting. So no movement. The following year they came, but they didn't pick it. They thought about it. As a matter of fact, they had one idea where they were all going to hide in a cake, and it would be wheeled in.
Seriously, that is never a bad idea. I'm sorry. That's
my favorite with Peter Blau's response is, it wouldn't allow very much pastry left over. So he's worried about dessert.
Right. This is about right. Yeah.
So they didn't, but they were always there, and it soon became clear that they knew a lot more than most of the BSI, so this was somewhat embarrassing. And one year, they had all gathered at the Algonquin, which used to be where we started every January weekend. The lobby would be filled with Sherlockians, all talking a mile a minute, but at some point they all looked at their watches, and they rose and left. And from different parts of that big lobby, seven women stood up and looked at each other, said, hey, you're a Sherlockian?
Mm-hmm.
And they came together. And that's when Ash was really born, when it went out to the people. They went out for dinner at a small restaurant called Lares and could not stop talking. They had a wonderful time. They all talk about this as one of those gold is in the air kinds of moments.
Aww.
When you all met my people.
Yes.
Yes, yes. You are my people. I knew they were somewhere.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
So they happily got together, and from that, Ash was born. And in the beginning, their entire idea was to break open the BSI.
Mm-hmm.
But when that wasn't working, they kind of found they had a lot of fun by themselves.
Screw that.
And yeah. So they gave a dinner every night opposite the BSI dinner.
Because everybody's got to eat.
That's well, right, of course. And everybody's got to talk about Sherlock Holmes.
That's right.
Right.
And the dinners grew. They started with the original seven and were at 140 and 150 by the time BSI finally saw the light. And they were uproarious and silly and funny and rowdy and filled with all manner of happy things. So much so that the guys kept wanting to come to our meeting. And we'd say, sure.
So, but Ash membership now, in terms of investiture, that wasn't always co-ed, was it?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
Nope, it was
but
all women.
So the boys wanted to come to the party.
Right.
They'd
but,
come
But they
after.
Couldn't join.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well,
okay.
The BSI would come
the BSI,
after.
BSI,
but
BSI
there would be guys
always
at the,
wrapped up
okay.
earlier than the Ash.
We were having too much fun to stop.
So the guys...
Oh, so they were crushing your after party.
They would right. back then.
and we would grab one and say, announce the investitures. So somebody always had a list.
Because nobody was tweeting it back then, because only the birds tweeted back then.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, the BSI investitures are announced at the BSI dinner every January. So the brand new members. And, yeah, I would imagine if you weren't following it on the interwebs,
there
weren't even cell phones. So,
needed carrier pigeons.
We would have... You know, the page in the livery with a parchment. Or,
yeah. Or like two tin cans and a really long string.
Yeah.
And then eventually everybody would end up at the Algonquin hanging out in the lobby and annoying the management.
We're sure the way at best.
Awesome.
I'm just thinking about how fun that is.
Yeah, that's so fun.
That's, it was.
That's, no, yeah, so that it initially started as a, well, they're not going to let us into our group, so we're going to start our own, and we're going to try to break into that group. And you know what? No. Our group's actually kind of cool. We don't need to be in your group.
Wait a second. That's just how it happened.
Our group is totally autonomous from your group.
Yes. Ash has never been a scion of the BSI. It's always been a parallel group. It's an international group, as the Sherlock Holmes Society of London is. Its own group and not a scion, or the Bootmakers of Toronto is a parallel group, not a scion of the BSI.
Sure.
So Ash is its own group.
And you know, that's really interesting in the sense that there are, you could basically count them on two hands, groups that are not scion societies of the Baker Street Irregulars who come together for regular meeting dinners and host events. And I can only imagine now they're proliferating enormously, which is fantastic and just wonderfully democratic. But I was really impressed when I first went to Ash, and when I was first introduced to Ash, it was through the brunch that they did during the birthday weekend. And I had been meeting people all that weekend who I had expected to be sort of looked at askance at all of the events that I went to. And rather than being looked at askance, like, you know, you would just be blinked at and then welcomed. And I remember really vividly that I was hanging out with Ash people and BSI people late at night at O'Looney's, of course, after one of the events that I had been suddenly invited to within days of having an email about this existing after I first moved to New York. And I couldn't afford to go to the cocktail party the next day. Somebody said, hey, do you want to go to the open cocktail party on the Saturday? There's lots of Ash there. There's lots of BSI there. And I was surrounded by BSI and Ash at the time. And I said, I don't have $80, man. Like, that's not something that I have at the moment. And literally within, I'm going to say it was 5 seconds, there were 4 20s in front of me from 4 different people. Yeah. It's a really generous group of people. Yeah. And the Ash brunch that I was first introduced to, you know, a large number of Ash, so, so welcoming to everybody. And, like, I'm
she's
rapidly...
She's forgetting me.
But No. Everyone... Well, that's a good anecdote, though. If you want to tell that anecdote, you totally can, because you were very kind. Like, the whole time. Yeah. All right, tell it. You can tell the story. Like, it's good.
The first time we met, Lindsay was climbing the stairs to the brunch.
And they were so nice. Everyone was so nice.
But you see, we thought she was going to the wrong place. She is this young, beautiful, vibrant woman, and we are as we are.
Yeah. And frankly, in those days, we did not have that many young people.
But they are as they are, which is beautiful, vibrant women. And you were on the verge, I think. It was possibly
in the wrong place.
Yes.
Right.
But I didn't phrase it like that. She's kind to remember, because that's what I was thinking. No. This is a Sherlock Holmes group. It's kind of a private brunch. Yes, that's where I'm going.
Oh.
Oh, really?
I love Sherlock Holmes so hard. Can I come to your brunch?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And now it's a different demographic, but we could totally... Yes. Yeah,
that's
we should
right.
talk about that
we
later.
We were, frankly, a lot grayer back then.
Yeah, back then.
But that leads me to my next question. As Ash was formed... Did that actually bring out a lot more female Sherlockians?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I mean, a lot of women who had been interested, had been Sherlockians in their hearts, in their own private practice, didn't, as Susan said, when she was 19 or 20 and didn't know there were any others, or did know, and all they knew were the Baker Street Irregulars, and knew they couldn't cross that threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And got all despondent and huddled at home with the cannon going, they'll never take me in, but I have my cannon. And then, a group I can join and be with other Sherlockians and have a rollicking good time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly did attract the unchurched.
I mean, tell us tales. You guys shook the trees. I mean, were there any sort of memorable, like, meetings of people?
Oh, there were great meetings.
No, I'm sure, but, like, people must have said to you, thank God you're here. I
can remember my own feelings the first ASH meeting I went to, which is, I think, in 78. I came to New York in 77 and thought ASH was some kind of ladies' auxiliary, and I stayed away from it. I'm sorry to be such an idiot, but that I was that.
What
at that
did
time.
You know?
I knew nothing. I thought, these were all the wives going. I don't want to be with them. I want to be with the people who really want to talk homes. So foolishly, I did some other things with people I was with. But the next year, I did go to the ASH dinner, and I still remember sitting in that room and looking around and thinking, I have never been with this many lively, intelligent people who care about what I care. It was like this book opening in front of you. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think lots of people had that experience. Oh, yeah. There were newspaper articles written about us fairly often, so the word would get out that way. And then the bookstores in town would have copies of our journal or would have announcements for the next meeting. So we would pick up people in all different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of us had that same reaction. Oh, wow! Yeah. Here they are! I've been looking for you!
Impressive bunch of people.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and obviously all of this happened before the advent of the internet.
Yes. But, yes, it did.
So word of mouth, I mean, basically the organization, people joined mostly because of word of mouth. That
you
discover a friend or picking up a copy of the journal
or newspaper article. Or, yeah, it was old media.
So the ASH publication was in existence since the founding of ASH?
Nope.
Pretty
close.
70.
The ASH newsletter was, wait, I've got...
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Well.
But, you know, they're about...
Documentary evidence.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Fact checking.
In the middle of a podcast.
Somebody talk.
Cut and sip.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about when the Muse came to be, Serpentine Muse, which is our publication, Katie Carlson took over editing it right away. And she said, we will make this a seasonal newsletter. It will come out every season, but we decide when the seasons change. I just thought that was great foresight.
That is thinking ahead.
That is, yeah.
You're not
brilliant.
Wrong. 1976, ASH Newsletter had the first copy of the logo.
So 1976, ASH Newsletter starts, and then you were circulating to anyone who was interested?
Yes. Like,
and that spread via word of mouth to other people who were interested?
Yes, it would spread via word of mouth, via finding the invitation, which would be posted at mystery bookstores, finding a copy of the publication. Gene Thelwell, for example, remembers going into Murder, Inc., which no longer exists, and finding the Muse and buying every copy they had, every issue they had.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and
great.
And immediately
That's awesome.
Writing to Evie and saying, I want to be one.
And, of course, since Evie and some of the others were corresponding with John Shaw
mm-hmm.
and Peter Blau, who were both great correspondents with a wide circle of people they were writing to, word got out through them as well.
If anybody
came across a young woman who was interested, or an old woman for that matter, would put them on
a
Evie.
A woman
would suggest writing to Evie.
Yeah. Know,
and
how
spread.
Often did ASH meet in the 70s?
Two, three times a year.
It
was before my time, so I didn't come until the 80s.
The January was the big one.
Yeah.
And I never made any of those other meetings because I'm living in Chicago at that point. But I remember getting the invitations and wishing.
And there were things like theater parties and... there was a Needlepoint exhibition
mm-hmm.
once before,
mm-hmm.
again, before my time called Quick Watson.
Nice.
Everybody did. Sherlocky and Needlepoint, and it was all exhibited in Pat's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a good party. I like that.
Needlepoint and drinks. I'm there.
That's right.
Yeah.
There were always drinks.
Good.
Now, while this was starting on, what was the relationship between ASH and the BSI?
Friendly confrontational.
Okay.
Well,
care to elaborate?
Well, most of the BSI, and particularly Julian Wolfe, who was running the show, it was a kind of amused contempt, and I don't think that's going too far.
Probably not. He did publish their efforts in the journal, though, which I've always thought was big of him, because he really thought they were horrors.
Well, you know, you want a good article in your journal, you publish a good article.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like selfishness,
buy. But, you know, absolutely no concessions there. And on the part of most of the women, I think, a certain amount of frustration and yearning would be...
It comes out in some of our songs. You remember we sing in
yes, yes.
The Tables Down
songs.
At Simpsons and the place Goldini Dwells, the last God have mercy on BSI.
Oh, no, we might as well sing it, right?
Not me.
You guys can sing. That's fine. I'm just going to sit here.
That's our first round.
Wait.
Right before draining our glasses.
Dry. Yeah, there is a de facto group called the Ash Tone Deaf Choir. It is not official, but it's well known, and Susan's a charter member.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
She's a very charming member, though. No, seriously, how does that start?
Adventurous scholars off on a high.
That's right.
Famed for draining our glasses dry.
Lord have mercy on BSI.
Ha, ha,
ha.
Yay!
Oh. I don't know my songs yet.
Sorry. We have songs. We have many songs.
Well, that actually leads me, you know, when you get together, what are some of the things that you guys, you know, go about doing? I mean, obviously you all have a love, the common thread being your love for Holmes and Watson.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
How do you celebrate
And
that?
Alcohol. Alcohol, good food, wine, women, and song. Susan's History of the Ash. I have a little chapter in there, and the title of the chapter is Wine, Women, and Song. We drink, we sing, we read the canon.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm curious, actually. Like, I mean, I know how our meetings generally work today. So, as a new Ash, every Ash Wednesday, as we call it,
right.
We meet on Wednesday night in a lovely Irish pub, and we order some drinks, chat with each other about our lives, chat with each other about what's gone on in the month previous. Generally, we get into some sort of Sherlockian discussion of what's going on in the world of Sherlock Holmes, and right now that is so vibrant because there's so many things happening all the time that we can hardly contain ourselves, and I am, you know, like bouncing off walls like a ping pong princess, like just trying to absorb it all. And now the demographic of the Ash meetings is really interesting because since Ash has always been so inclusive about their meetings, and yes, anyone can come. You can hang out with us. I mean, we are the cool ones. It's really been reflected in how many young... I mean, there's Matt Laffey, who is known on the interwebs, I believe, as Always 1895 on Twitter and Tumblr.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He took a picture about 3 months ago of... maybe 3 months ago. It might be longer now. Of an Ash dinner at which, you know, a really high percentage of the table was people just who, for one reason or another, there was a lot of folk who were there who were under 35. And
the youngies outnumbered the oldies.
Yeah,
I think there were three of us over 35.
Yeah, it was
and we were Dallinger. Way over 35.
Yeah, a lot of the people who are regular comers to the Ash, who are old school Ash, just couldn't come to that particular meeting. So it's an amazing picture because it's a picture of a lot of young people who are rabid about Holmes and people who have been rabid about Holmes for a really, really long time, which is just, you know, so heartwarming and fantastic. So when we get together, I can vouch for us. We order adult beverages. We talk about our lives. We talk about Sherlockian goings-on. Sometimes we talk about other geek goings-on because there are sort of crossover geek interests that various people have, like P.G. Wodehouse.
The Animaniac song has been known to be sung.
The Animaniac song? We can sing the entire Animaniac song.
How embarrassing, but yes, we can.
The singing of questionable songs will invariably happen at some point, and then, you know, some of it is devoted to, you know, various other things that we think are relevant. And add things if you think that that's not accurate, but since that encapsulates, to some extent, Ash meetings now,
Ash Wednesday's not really an Ash meeting. They're fairly recent. 10, 15 years?
I think it's got to be 20 now.
Good God, time flies.
Yeah, it's got to have been more than 10.
And it developed from the fact that there were 8 of us who used to get together twice a month.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
So about 15, because we didn't do that until after Pat died.
Oh, you may be right.
Yeah.
But we used to get together
every week.
Oh, every week.
Every week, every Thursday, we would get together, as it happened. And this devolved, and people moved, and things like that.
Katie would come into town and say, when are you getting together? I want to come in and see you. And we'd say, great, and arrange it. And it soon became clear that a whole lot of people wanted more than our usual 2 meetings or 3 meetings a year.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
So then we said, okay, we'll do Ash Wednesday. And its original way, pre-internet, was to announce that we would be going out on the first Wednesday of every month. And anybody who wanted to join us could call either Evie or me and find out where.
Great. That's a really efficient system.
So but then now that the internet's out, we send out a message and let people respond that way. Right. But it was an outgrowth of that. And what I don't think any of us thought, but has proved to be true, is it's a wonderful first step for new Sherlockians.
Oh, sure.
Because a Scion meeting is kind of scary, not for the contempt factor. I remember thinking, I will go in, and as I enter, somebody will ask me a question.
Mm. Yeah.
And what if I don't know the answer?
Right.
Yeah. We have no quizzes.
Which is funny, because you say you felt that when you were doing that. Even now, I think that's the big...
I agree.
...thing that holds people back from actually wanting to join in, that, oh my God, they're going to quiz me on the canon, and I haven't read all of it yet.
Yes. Yeah. Or if I've read it, I haven't memorized it.
Right. Or they're going to start asking questions about adaptations. I don't even know who Peter Cushing is.
God help us, chronology.
Right. Totally.
Chronology, the low point of Sherlockian stuff.
Oh, to us.
Yeah. Well, stand by it. People.
Yeah.
Thank heavens for Andy Peck.
Yes.
Yes.
The Date Being is an invaluable book.
Yeah. Andy Peck, back when he was a high school student, I want to say, might have been a college student, really young, took all of the chronologies and put them together in one book with a chart.
Yeah, God bless him.
It's come out now in a later edition that Les helped him with to add more chronologists, because there are some people who love this.
It's like kudzu. You can't stop the chronologist.
Right. But it's great for those of us who like to write,
but
hate chronology.
For me, it's like getting Rickrolled. Oh, man, I expected something cool in this collection. Chronology. That's it.
No, but it's handy. You don't have to do it yourself.
No. I mean, Andy's thing is really handy.
It is.
Yeah. That's handy. So, yeah, I think that a lot of people who are absolute Sherlockian enthusiasts who came to it by maybe other channels than the canon, or came to it by other channels than Scions, probably have the impression that you show up for a Sherlockian meeting and there's like a chronological quiz where they request that you repeat as much of the Klinger annotated versus the Baring Gould annotated chronology as possible in a side-by-side,
It's got to be scary, scary.
And, nothing whatsoever like that. You show up, have a brew, and talk Holmes.
That's right. That's why Ash Wednesday has been invaluable, because we always encourage first-timers, come there first, know some people, so when you go to a Scion meeting, you're not
feeling out of it. It's a no-pressure environment.
I'm curious still, though, that's what it looks like now. Were there any epic, I know there were, epic, awesome meetings of Ash
there
in
was
the 70s?
After John Shaw died, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
When John Shaw died in 1992... Favorite Sherlockian to everybody in Norway. He was a wonderful man.
He was indeed.
Great collector. And we were all kind of gobsmacked by the news. And it was, I can't remember the day. It was like a Monday or Tuesday before an Ash Wednesday. And that was the drive. Let's all get together. And so we had somewhere between 20 and 30 people at that Ash Wednesday. And we just went around the table telling John Shaw stories. There were lots to be told. He was a very interesting and humorous and delightful man. So that was one that sticks in mind as just being something that, thank heavens, the framework was there to let us do it. Because we were all kind of mourning together and still wanting to enjoy. John Shaw was not a man who you wanted to be down in the mouth about. You wanted to giggle about all of the wild things he did.
So it was a community by that time.
Yeah.
The formal Ash meetings, I mean, then as now, usually involved papers and singing. And
more singing.
Hardly ever a quiz.
No, some of the very early ones had quizzes.
Usually humorous quizzes, but always papers. The legendary one is Francine Swift.
Oh, that is wonderful. It wasn't a paper. She did that all extempore.
That doesn't mean it wasn't a paper.
No, it was great.
It was a presentation then, anyway. It was subsequently published, wasn't it?
I'm
not sure that it was either, but this is legendary. I wasn't even there.
I was.
And it's legendary.
How far does the parsley sink in the butter?
Oh.
And she did experiments with it.
Oh,
and she
great.
Told all of the experiments one after another under different temperature conditions and whether the butter part was hard when you started or soft. Or
salted and unsalted.
That's good.
Yes, the whole thing. And she told us, she rose and said she had something to tell us. And she, not a note, she just told the whole thing, and she was very good at that. And
that's forensic science, baby.
No.
And she came
for
to the
science.
End and says...
For science!
But she came to the end and says... The damn stuff doesn't sink in the butter, it floats.
Oh.
It was wonderful. It was a great moment.
Oh, that's great.
We used to have in the early days a
Mary
lot
Ellen
more.
Mary Ellen Rich.
Oh, on How to Faint.
How to Faint. Have Victoria
that was a great
Guide to Fainting.
Good to know.
And there were like
legendary.
Five steps where you went,
Yes.
Right before you went down, it was wonderful.
That won't come over on the podcast.
No, no, a number of very, very...
Yes, a very dramatic gestures. Yes,
Lindsay and I will take still pictures later.
there will be a slideshow accompanying this podcast.
A magic lantern show.
Yes. Reenact various stirring gestures from early Ash meetings.
The Friends of Bogies on Baker Street performed together as such for the first time at an Ash.
And they did four dinners. This was part of our radio troupe, also Sherlockians. There was a lot of going back and forth between those two groups. And they did wonderful, hysterical presentations. I think the very first one was Holmes
Through the Ages. Different authors.
Yes, different authors' views of Holmes. And it was wonderful.
Yes, from everything from A.A. Milne to James Joyce.
Oh, wow. Sure. Yeah, a lot of authors have had amazing opinions on Holmes.
But this was all imagined.
In the style of
Raymond
Chandler and...
Pinter.
Harold Pinter.
I would love to read that
one. The Holmes Coming.
I'd be into that.
What you'd have to do is hear it, though.
Yes, we have it on tape.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Did they do Hemingway Holmes?
No Hemingway. Yes.
But they always did wonderful imaginative things. We had a lot more skits and plays back then.
Yeah, I guess.
We don't do that much anymore.
Not so much.
Could happen.
So could happen. Absolutely could happen.
Could happen.
People can be convinced.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
I don't know.
Abby is looking for presentations for the next day.
Abby is always looking for presentations.
Wow. Sinister light in my eyes.
Yes. So, I mean, obviously Ash came about because, you know, females weren't invited to become members of the BSI. Do you think that there's still a kind of a male-female divide going on in the Sherlock fandom now? Obviously there was sort of this idea that women couldn't possibly know Holmes as much as we do back then, which kind of led to the birth of your group. Do you still feel that that goes on now?
There are pockets of it. There's the Speckled Band in Boston, the Six Napoleons in Baltimore, the Sons of the Copper Beeches in Philadelphia, the Diogenes Club in California,
Hugo's
Companions in Chicago.
Five Orange Pips.
And these that you're listing are all
male science.
But they're science at this point. They're behind their own...
Indeed.
They're behind their own...
There are pockets of it.
Mentors.
But other than that, I think women have been... accorded the dignity of being the same level of Sherlockians as men in the BSI, in the Sherlockian world in general, except for these few benighted traditionalists.
Why do you think those scion groups still exist? I mean, do you think it's because of this? You said traditionalists.
That's their story.
That's their story.
May I tell you a story of my life?
Please do, dear.
Yes,
mind
of course.
You didn't.
Yes, that's do it.
I tried to break into Hugo's Companions when I lived in Chicago. All male group. They got to know me. They would have some meetings that were open to women, so I got to know them well, and they were forced to recognize that I was a real Sherlockian and knew the stuff.
Or, as John Bennett Shaw called her, absolutely the most brilliant Sherlockian.
Oh, so there's that.
Yes,
in
of course.
Sprint. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
So, while I was still living there, but while I was about to move to New York, I always thought, do it now because I won't be here. This is what you're thinking.
Yeah, smart.
They had a vote, and the vote came in tied every time they called it. So they came down. I was dining in the same restaurant with the wife of the current Sir Hugo. People would come down with little notes about what was happening upstairs. And they said, we're not going to be able to do it. It's a tie. Okay, I went away. I lived here for a couple years, and a new Sir Hugo called me.
So the Sir Hugo is the president.
That's right.
Of the
Chicago group.
Right. So all the different Scion groups have a particular name for their president.
That's right.
The BSI president is the Wiggins.
Currently.
Sir Hugo is the one for the Chicago group.
And Evie and Ash is the principal unprincipled adventuress.
Exactly. Principal of all the unprincipled adventuresses.
And this Sir Hugo felt that he saw a loophole. So would I fly to Chicago to become a Hugo's Companion? And I said, bet your booty. And
I bet you said words to that effect.
Yes.
And so I made arrangements for my flight. And then about a week or so before, I got a call from another Sherlockian because his plot had sneaked out. And there were a lot of anti-people. This was another friend who called to say,
keep a secret.
No. too who said, it's not going to be pretty. They are rallying the troops against you. Think about whether you want to come.
Wow.
And I said,
that's hardcore.
I still want to come. Paul has invited me. I'm not going to desert him now when he's put himself on the line. I'm coming. You'll have to deal with it. And I was picked up at the airport with an honor guard of three of them. Oddly enough, the moment I remember clearest is when we opened the door to the room, and for some reason, even though I knew everything that was happening here, I'd forgotten that they would be all men. I forgot that I was going to be the only woman. So I remember pausing in the door, looking around, and Bob Hahn put his hand on my back and pushed me. I still remember that well. And it was an odd kind of an evening, because these were all people who had been good friends of mine, but now they didn't quite want to talk to me. So I would kind of go up to groups of people and insinuate myself in and just join the conversation, and they were all kind of... So we stood for the tripos, which was the custom of this group, that they would, all the people who wanted to be members would stand and be quizzed by Hugo's companions. What was embarrassing to me, because I had been a Sherlockian by that time for 30 years or 35 years or something, and all the rest were new. So I knew the answer to every question. But I was embarrassed that I didn't...
A correct answer was once... An answer was once considered to be correct when asked, name two wines in the canon. And the respondent said, red and white.
Nice.
They were generous.
How about Bune? With my lunch. Bone.
Montrachet. Yeah. Red and white.
That red and white, and he got in. And he later became a Sir Hugo, too.
Yeah.
So they asked the questions, and after a while I was embarrassed, and so I would whisper the answers to the guys around me. I didn't want to answer every question. It was ugly. No.
It was ugly. I like how you were too dignified to, like, crush them.
She's a kind soul.
So after the testing, they announced that we were all members, and we sat down to dinner. And we ate, and I was a member for all of that dinner. And at the end of the dinner, one of the other gentlemen stood up and said, we had a smoke-filled room, which was how they chose their officers. And we have voted this entire officership out, and this officership in, and you are no longer a member.
Wow.
Now, what year was this?
89, I want to say.
Really?
Oh, Lord, wow.
Late 80s,
something. It was shortly before women were first invested in BSI.
That's impressive stuff.
Because one of my great joys, when women were first invested, which was in 1991 at the cocktail party, couldn't be done at the dinner because none of us were there. We were all having our ash dinner. But we came to the cocktail reception the next day, and we'd heard some rumors that something was going to happen. We had no idea how extensive it would be. And Tom Stix first invested... three women who could never show up for dinner. Dame Jean Conan Doyle, who was invested at the same moment in England. A woman named Catherine McMahon.
Oh, she was invested simultaneously in the Sherlock Holmes Society of London.
Well, she was invested in BSI by a Sherlock Holmes.
By a Sherlock Holmes.
Who was also a BSI.
Understood.
As many of them have both.
Gotcha.
Yes. Honorarium.
And
Catherine McMahon, who had done the original crossword puzzle that started the Baker Street Irregulars in 1934.
If you solve this crossword puzzle and
you will become a member.
You will become a member.
And,
except if you
and
were
cruelest joke ever.
Yes, exactly, because they all sent in their solutions and only the men were invited. But they traced her down, and she was the only one still alive from 1934 who had completed that crossword puzzle. She was at that time in a nursing home in Santa Fe, but she was awarded by somebody who went there at that same time. This was all to be done simultaneously. And Edith Meiser, who was one of our great heroes, the woman who'd written all of the Sherlock Holmes on the radio, as well as some mysteries and some other things.
She was beautiful, queenly presence.
She was tall and gorgeous. She'd been in chorus lines before. She was a featured performer
on Broadway.
Yep. Wow.
She was in George White's Scandals. She was a producer. She was a writer, a novelist.
A badass.
And the most glamorous creature you could imagine. Cap of gray hair.
White almost.
Mm-hmm. Almost white. Beautiful legs, even when they weren't functioning, and she was in a wheelchair.
Oh, you know, just,
wow.
But she was at this point like 95.
Sure.
Right.
Close to. She died at 95.
And she wasn't there, actually. She'd come to the Gillette luncheon for me, and she couldn't go to both. So she wasn't there. So we're all applauding, knowing that these are kind of like safe investitures as well. And then they went on, and they invested Julie Rosenblatt and Evelyn and me.
Oh, wow.
It was, yay! I can't even tell you what this moment was like. For a while, everything stopped for like 20 minutes while everybody went around screaming and crying and hugging. Yeah.
Well, this little knot of Chicagoans
in
the corner going,
what, 20, 25 years, 30 years, something like that, right? I'm sorry, I can't
imagine.
91.
91.
It was 21 years.
21 years,
ago.
Okay.
And I noticed that none of those Hugo's companions were coming up to congratulate me.
Oh.
So, of course, I sought them out. I went out to the bar and found them all there, and I said, I know you were looking to congratulate me, and you just couldn't get through the crowd, so I've come out here to, to give you that opportunity.
Such a brat. Here I am. I'm ready.
And still, they wouldn't have her as a Hugo's companion, and it's still all male.
Interesting.
Well, a lot of men quit the group over it.
All right.
There were a good number, including one of the men who stood tripos with her, who sent a formal letter saying he didn't want to be a member of any group that wouldn't let Susan Rice in.
No one does.
Some big name people, Norman Davis, Bob Hahn, both quit over it, but they would not be moved.
So now, presently, the way things stand, Ash is also co-ed.
Yes.
When did that happen?
Yeah, when
it started taking men diners in 1979, and it was a decision that
caused some trouble.
Really caused some trouble.
Some women wanted it to be just all women. Girls.
And I do understand that. After we opened the January dinner to men, we kept one meeting for all women in the year. And they were the best meetings. We were all so silly together. And uproarious. And all of the things that were really not when the other gender is there. So we kept that for a long time. But then, and I have to say, I've always been for it because I think any kind of exclusion based on stupid things is stupid.
Isn't it?
So I was pushing for male membership as well. And in the end, Evie, who changes her mind slowly but surely, invested, I guess, about 20 men that first year.
So you guys were gender blind, what, 20 years before?
We were different because we invited men to the dinners starting in 79.
Sure.
But we were all, the females were the members.
Right.
They did 4 honorary memberships for John Bennett Shaw, Peter Blau, William S. Baring-Gould, all of who had supported Ash in its formative years.
Yeah. Right.
And Tom Stix, who invested us. The year after the investiture, they gave those 4. But that was it. And in some year, 2000 and something, 4,
no,
3,
not that long ago.
Something. Yeah, it's after 2000.
Yes, but more recently, men were invested.
Were actually allowed to be invested. Yeah.
I remember really vividly, because I was only quite recently invested in the Baker Street Irregulars, being in line for the bathroom with a bunch of Ash women. Just this long, long line of people who were also in Ash waiting for the bathroom at the, it wasn't at the Yale Club, it was where we were before. And there were only 2 stalls, and I was standing, I think I was standing next to Maggie, Schpack, or like someone in a chain. No, I was with Marilyn McKay and Maggie.
Oh, yes.
And, we were sort of saying to each other, oh, isn't it terrible to have to wait for the bathroom with giant smiles on our faces? Like, oh, isn't it fantastic to have to wait for the bathroom?
I
because
have to
you're
tell you, Lindsay, that was one of the other excuses given by the men. We have both bathrooms all for us, they would say proudly.
Oh, what a shame. What a shame. Yep. Well, having to wait for the line at the ladies' room because there were so many ladies at that BSI dinner.
Let me tell you,
that felt pretty good, being in the piss line.
In early days, when there were fewer women at the BSI dinner, we would always crow that the men were waiting in their long line to get into the men's room.
Because there would only be 15 or 20 of us at the dinner.
Yeah. Right. Now, the tables have changed, but in a good way, probably.
Yes, definitely.
I like saying the tables have changed.
The tables have changed.
They don't, really.
We've turned the tables.
They've turned, yes.
Yeah.
If you had a telescope, because you guys are going to probably, and I certainly will be, involved in Ash for the next few decades, where would you like to see Ash going if I mean, Ash exists as sort of it's a self-perpetuating and really autonomous, beautiful group that welcomes everyone. We have events every January. And I think it's perfect just as it is, but there's been a lot of changes in Ash that I've watched just in the last couple of years. So maybe if you guys just talked for a second about how you've seen it change in the last couple of years and where you'd like to see it go if it went on a trajectory.
One of the differences between Ash and BSI in my mind is that BSI was born out of people who liked a drink and a good conversation. Ash was born out of a heartfelt friendship. And that's what got it over the point that so many groups die, collegiate groups especially, when everybody goes different places and suddenly you're not easily together.
Mm-hmm.
What got them over that was that there were 6, but really 4 of them that were absolutely bosom buddies and would use any excuse to get together. Mm-hmm. Because they all loved homes, they would bring homes into the reason to get together. So it's born of friendship. So I guess what I would say, I would hope for Ash in the future, is that it's always about friendship, that's the strongest thing. BSI doesn't have that for me. BSI is wonderful to be part of that honorary society, but it doesn't have the deep gut these are the people I would go to saying, oh my God, I need $5,000 right now. Can you give it to me? And they would.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
These are the people I could call at 3 o'clock in the morning and said, would you come here right now?
Yes.
And they would.
Yeah.
And BSI doesn't have that same
cachet. Well, I'm sure there's some BSI who have that. But
among themselves, yes. But not as a group, as a totality.
Yeah. Of course, Ash being a much smaller group, it has more of a
It's very personal. Yeah. I would say. And more cohesive. So. You're right.
So, gosh, we are just much more fun.
What sort of person should come to an Ash meeting if they wanted to?
Anybody who loves Sherlock Holmes wants to hang out with a bunch of really cool people.
Bright people, inquisitive people, clubbable people.
No, we don't mean we're going to club you over the head.
No.
Social people.
Yeah.
There are, as far as I know, no female members of the Billy Club.
That's right.
There is a Sherlockian group called the Billy Club. They're all named William.
They have
a ceremonial Billy Club, which was found at a street fair.
There are some really obscure Sherlockian groups
in the world. Oh, yes. Well, there's the Sherlockian dermatologists, the Sherlockian librarians, the Sherlockian geologists.
Is their favorite case the Blanche Soldier, the dermatologist?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They take their name from it. It's the St. James.
The James.
Oh, nice. Nice. I like it. Mm. Oh, it's good.
You know, people who do fit what you're looking for, you know, to become part of the group, how do they get involved? I mean, what is the best way of them showing up to an Ash meeting? Is it getting in touch with you? Is it
usually people email Susan.
Yeah.
She's on the Sherlockian calendar.
Perfect.
And she's easy to find online, and people do. And then every month or so, somebody sends her an email, says, hi, I love Sherlock Holmes, and I want to get involved, and how can I?
Yeah.
And being the warm, wonderful person she is, she responds. And
so, Susan, what is your email address for any and all comers who want to come to a meeting?
Susan221BEE@gmail.com.
That was remarkably clear.
It was very clear.
And Susan, spelled as you would imagine. 221 with the numerals. I like it.
Yes.
Is there any message that you would have for young Sherlockians, male or female, who are listening to our podcasts?
Don't be shy. Come join us. Read the canon. The canon has a definite article. I've heard I've just been amused hearing people talking about reading canon.
Like, oh, I like that corruption,
like
actually.
Like reading scripture.
I like that corruption. Isn't that a funny corruption? But I like it.
It is.
I actually like
it. You're the one who called us a religion, after all.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
No,
it's
appropriate. The verbiage goes to reflect
that. Sherlockianism is not a pastime. It's not a hobby. It's not even an avocation. It's a religion.
I guess I would add, as you grow up and become more and more embroiled in the adult world, you have to find your bliss. And if your bliss is among like-minded people, this is a wonderful place to find it and will provide a retreat from the nastiness of life and lasting friendships.
Amen.
I don't think we can do better than that.
No, my goodness. I think that's a really good way to...
Don't make it rain on my face.
Stop it.
Oh, that's so good.
And I think Lindsay and I can both attest that the group is very welcoming.
Oh, God, wonderful.
And you should show up and take part in it. So.
Yeah, come hang out with us.
There will be no quiz.
We are only upgraded by good young Sherlockians.
Yes, please.
There's no limit on that.
Infuse new, fresh blood in our tired old veins.
Not so tired.
No,
they
not so tired.
They outstrip me from time to time.
Ash, after all, was born to boogie.
We have a song about it.
We have a song about it.
If you want to hear the song, you can't hear the song now. You have to come to a meeting.
There you go.
They have a song for everything.
Yep.
We do have a lot of songs.
All right.
True facts. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Great.
We very much appreciate it.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1